As we continue our study in the book of Genesis, we're still in the 26th chapter, and last time we'd gotten into the 28th verse. The setting for this passage is that Isaac and Rebekah have recently been living in Gerar over in the land of Philistines because of a drought. Isaac did quite well there. He planted and reaped 100-fold and prospered very well with his flocks and herds and with his servants, so much so that the Philistines became envious of him and they asked him to leave. They even stopped up some of the wells that his father had digged, and they disputed over some of the wells that Isaac had dug. So Isaac left and went to the valley of Gerar. There he dug another well, which was a very good well, and he was able to be prosperous there, but finally he moves on to Beersheba, their original home. And he probably left some of his flocks in that valley of Gerar, but as soon as he got to Beersheba, verse 24 says, "And the Lord appeared unto him the same night and said, I am the God of Abraham thy father. Fear not, for I am with thee, and will bless thee, and multiply thy seed for my servant Abraham's sake." So as soon as he got back to Beersheba, God immediately appeared to him and gave him a blessing, and told him that he was going to protect him and be with him, and he was going to multiply seed for my servant Abraham's sake. Verse 25 says, "And he built an altar there, and called upon the name of the Lord, and pitched his tent there, and there Isaac's servants digged a well." Now, while they were still digging the well, evidently, verse 26 says, "Then Abimelech went to him from Gerar, and Ahuzzath, one of his friends, and Phicol, the chief captain of his army." So here comes Abimelech, the king of the Philistines. He's coming from the capital of Gerar over here to Bathsheba, where Isaac is, and he approaches Isaac. Well, verse 27, Isaac gives him a kind of a cold greeting. He said unto them, "Wherefore come ye to me, seeing ye hate me and have sent me away from you?" I mean, the last contact he had, they asked him to leave. They thought he was getting too big for them, and they didn't want him around anymore. So he has a right to ask, you know, what's the deal here? Why are you approaching me now? You should be happy that I'm gone. And they probably were pleased that he was no longer a competitor with them in any way, but they had a reason. Verse 28 says, "And they says, We saw certainly that the Lord was with thee, and we said, Let there be now an oath betwixt us, even betwixt us and thee, and let us make a covenant with thee." So now what the king wants to do here, Abimelech wants to make peace with Isaac. He realizes that Isaac is powerful, that God has blessed him, and that it's not going to be any good thing for him to be at odds with Isaac. Matter of fact, Isaac could even turn on him and maybe completely destroy him. And so he wouldn't make peace with Isaac. And this also is an example shown by Isaac to the others. Whenever he did leave, he left in peace. He didn't cause any kind of hostilities. He didn't do them any damage, any harm, any kind of way, but he left like they asked him to do. And so this was an example to them maybe to come back and say, okay, we like this peace. We'd like to have peace. And of course, as much as we can, we are to live peaceably with all men. This is taught in the New Testament too. We are to avoid strife as much as we possibly can. And here was a chance for Isaac to have peace with Abimelech now, although he didn't seem he could have it before, but he can have it now. And so this king wants to have an oath between the two and make a covenant with him, an agreement with him. So this is quite a compliment to Isaac that these men who were on the verge of being his enemies and had actually done him damage before were now wanting to have a peaceful settlement. Verse 29 says that thou wilt do us no hurt. So this is the main crux of the thing. We don't want you to do us any harm. We want to live so that we can be free from worry about having to have any violence done to us. And of course, it would be nice for all men to be able to live so that they could say that those round about them will do no hurt. In our nation today, which is supposed to be a peaceful nation of law and order, we really can't say that because there are those in our communities who could do us harm any time. They could do us physical bodily harm. They could rob us. They could beat us. They could kill us. They could break into our houses. They could steal our possessions, our automobile, or whatever. And so in all kinds of ways that people around about us can do us harm. And so it would be nice if we could just have a covenant with everybody, which guaranteed that nobody would harm anybody else. How wonderful that would be. Well, these two powerful men now, Abimelech and Isaac, are making that kind of agreement now. The agreement is, on the part of Abimelech, talking to Isaac, that thou wilt do us no hurt, as we have not touched thee, and as we have done unto thee nothing but good. Well, that's a little bit slanted statement there. They had done some things that weren't good to Isaac. They had stopped up the wells. They had asked him to leave. They let him take all of his goods with him when he left. That was real nice, all right. But they really hadn't touched him physically, bodily. But they hadn't been the nicest to him, that's for sure. But he's putting up the proposition like this: as we have done unto thee nothing but good, and have sent thee away in peace. So they didn't let him go in peace. They didn't have any hostilities, really. They let him leave. They asked him to leave, and they let him leave. Then he says, thou art now the blessed of the Lord. We realize that you're receiving blessings from the Lord, your God, the Lord. And evidently, Abimelech had some recognition of the true God. He realized that he was powerful and that he could bless, and he did bless Isaac. And he realized that Isaac worshipped this God. And so verse 30 says, and he made them a feast, and they did eat and drink. So Isaac agreed to this. They had a feast. They ate and drank this feast commemorating this treaty of peace that they were going to have between the two groups. And verse 31 says, and they rose up betimes in the morning and sware one to another, and Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. So they took this oath the next morning. They left with the oath having been made, and they departed in peace. So what a wonderful feeling to be able to have peace. Peace with anybody. Anyone that you might have especially been at odds with in the past, now to make up and have peace and have no hard feelings. That's a wonderful feeling to have, a wonderful condition to be in. And as much as we can, we are to have peace with others. Our Bible teaches us this. And we see the example here of Isaac doing this very same thing. In Romans chapter 12, verses 17 and 18, recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. That's our instruction today in the Christian life, is to live peaceful with all men as much as is possible to do so. And that should be our stance, and it seems to be Isaac's stance here in this situation. Verse 32 says, and it came to pass the same day that Isaac's servants came and told him concerning the well which they had digged, and said unto him, we have found water. And so, just as Isaac was making this peaceful agreement with the Philistines, who had closed up his wells and argued with him over wells and taken wells away from him, actually, here Isaac is blessed with a new well. They'd found water. So we see how God does bless. God blessed Isaac in that although Isaac gave up some of the things that should have rightfully been his and did it in order to have peace, God then blessed him in the place of it. So now there is water. Isaac's servants came to him with the happy news that the well they were digging had struck a good supply of water. It was appropriate that the well be called the Well of the Oath, Beersheba, not only because of the pact signed that day, but also because of the similar covenant and name given to the place by Abraham long ago, when Abraham made another pact with another king Abimelech of the Philistines. No doubt Isaac also had in mind here God's great covenant, which he had just confirmed to him here at this place. So the appropriate name is the Well of the Oath, or Beersheba. And now we come to the last two verses of chapter 26, verses 34 and 35, verses dealing with Esau's wives. Now some think these two verses are better taken in the context of chapter 27, where we read about the conflict of Esau and Jacob. But since they are placed at the end of chapter 26, we'll deal with them now to some extent. Verse 34 and 35 say, "When Esau was 40 years old, when he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Bashemeth, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, which were a grief of mind unto Isaac and to Rebekah." So this could be termed Isaac's foolish marriage, foolish in several ways. Some think that it was a great mistake because he married two wives together, and this may be the reason he's called a fornicator in Hebrews 12:16. But a very great problem here is the fact that he married Canaanites, who were strangers to the blessings of Abraham, who actually had a curse placed on them, brought about when Noah gave the prophecy about his grandson Canaan. And this may be the reason that Esau is called profane. He married these worldly women, and so it puts him automatically into the realm of the world. I mean, he is going to have to devote a certain amount of his life to worldly things, ungodly things, because his wives are not godly people. And that's just true in any situation. Even today, we marry someone who is not a member of the church, who is not a Christian, we're going to find that our marriage is going to have to devote a certain amount of its energy and effort toward things that have not to do with Christianity and God because of what our wives, or in the case of a woman wearing a man who's not a Christian, what her husband would want to do. So he showed here that he didn't really desire the blessings of God, nor did he dread the curse of God. Esau went his own way. But we see that this marriage caused a lot of grief and trouble to his parents. It grieved them, no doubt, that he married without asking them or without taking their advice and consent about the matter. And so we see that when children don't take the advice of the parents, don't listen to the parents, get no regard for the parents who are godly parents, that this is nearly always going to be a mistake. They're going to have to pay great price for taking that kind of a position. It also grieved them that he married the daughters of Hittites who had no religion among them. These were people that were not godly people. They didn't know what it would be like to sacrifice to God or to pray to God or to do anything that had to do with God. They didn't even know about God. And we know that Isaac would have remembered here very closely the fact that his father had great care concerning him that he should by no means marry a Canaanite. Abraham sent far away to find an appropriate wife for Isaac. Isaac was not to marry a Canaanite by any means. And so we can see that Isaac should have the same feeling, and would have the same feeling, regarding his sons not to marry a Canaanite, but this is what Esau did. He married two Canaanite women. And it seems also that his wives were probably contrary towards Isaac and Rebekah, in that they would have a conflict with them and not live peacefully with them. And so this would make for a bad situation in the whole family. In general, when children do things that bring grief to the minds of their good parents, bring grief to the minds of godly parents, then there is little reason to expect that God will bless them for that which they do. And that would be the case of Esau right here. So this brings the 26th chapter of Genesis to a close. We're now ready to begin the 27th chapter of Genesis.